But as Marty said, that we last week, we I hit that point where we could go a little bit further or not, because I really think verse 1 of chapter 36 flows more with chapter 35. And then you pick up in verse 2 through 7, we read those and talked about them because of it was important to make that connection to what was just said. But I want to read through those again before we jump into verse 8. And it's because you're about to get whiplash, because we're going to go through so much more in the text, just because this is just walking through. And I've got a question for y'all when we get on the back side of that, or about why. So here's something to think about. Why God is about to give us through Moses all this stuff that we're going to see from 36 to 39. You might be thinking, well, I don't know why yet. Well, you're going to see why I asked that question as we walk through this text. Because there's not going to be a lot of stopping and expositing and looking at the details. We've done that previously. So why again is it laid out for us? But again, this is them doing what he told them to do 10 chapters prior. So let me read verse 2 through 7 again. We covered this last Wednesday, but let me just read it again. Then Moses called. Brother Roy, how'd you say we should say this?
Bezalel and Oholiab.
All right, Bezalel and Aholiab, and every person wise at heart to whom Yahweh had given wisdom, everyone whose heart stirred him to come to the work to do it. And they received from Moses the entire contribution which the sons of Israel had brought to do the work in the service of the sanctuary, and they continued bringing to him freewill offerings every morning. And all the wise men who were doing all the work of the sanctuary came, each from the work which he was doing. And they said to Moses, "The people are bringing much more than enough for the service of the work which Yahweh commanded us to do." So Moses commanded, and a proclamation was passed throughout the camp, saying, "Let no man or woman any longer do the work for the contributions of the sanctuary." Thus the people were restrained from bringing any more. Indeed, the material they had was sufficient and more than enough for all the work to do it. But we spent a little bit of time talking about that, how they had, every day they kept bringing, and they brought more than what they needed. And it says that all the individual, I'm going to throw my word in here, like foremen of these different tasks would come and say, "We've got more than enough. We've got more than what we need." So they told them to stop bringing it. Any other thoughts on that? I don't think there probably is. It's pretty self-explanatory. So now we're about to start taking some really big bites out of this text. And I even struggled as I was reading through this again of, goodness, there's a temptation here to do what we do at other places of text, where we just jump through it. Because a lot of it is, we're going to say, well, we just read about this 10 chapters ago. However, I want us to think about why it might be important that God, through Moses, recorded all this after he'd already told him how to do it. It may just be pretty easy for us to come up with a thought on that. But anyway, just be thinking about that. So beginning in verse 8, I'm going to read down through we'll say verse 19. "And all those wise at heart among those who were doing the work made the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twisted linen and blue and purple and scarlet material with cherubim, the work of a skillful designer, Bezalel, made them. The length of each curtain was 28 cubits and the width of each curtain was 4 cubits. All the curtains had the same measurements. He joined the 5 curtains to one another, and the other 5 curtains he joined to one another. He made loops of blue on the edge of the outermost curtain in the first set. He did likewise on the edge of the curtain that was outermost in the second set. He made 50 loops in the one curtain, and he made 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that was in the second set. The loops were opposite each other. He made 50 clasps of gold and joined the curtains to one another with the clasps, so the tabernacle was one unit. Then he made curtains of goat's hair for a tent over the tabernacle. He made 11 curtains in all. The length of each curtain was 30 cubits and 4 cubits the width of each curtain. The 11 curtains had the same measurements. He joined the 5 curtains by themselves and the other 6 curtains by themselves. Moreover, he made 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that was outermost in the first set, and he made 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that was outermost in the second set. He made 50 clasps of bronze to join the tent together so that it would be a unit. He made a covering for the tent of ram skins dyed red and a covering of porpoise skins above." Some of y'all got badger skins there, right? Porpoise skins above. The outermost covering, this weatherproof covering. Okay. Anything jump out to you there? If you were here a couple of months ago when we read through it, this is, they're doing exactly the way that God told through Moses to do it. All the details are being covered. Everything's being done. Anything jump out to any of you there? We're saying that they're following the precise commandments and directions and directives given to them. Anything else? The one thing I'll bring to your attention again, and when you look, and I'm not going to go point every single one of these out, but if you look, we read about the 50 rings he kept making as they were building the curtains and going outward. If you notice that, the closest ones to the inner were what? Were gold. And they start working out as gold, silver, bronze. So the value closest to where the innermost place would be at. And we remember we saw that back when we were looking at it a while back, that even the things that are made, the closer they are to the Holy of Holies, it's more valuable. Gold, and it works itself out to silver, bronze, etc. So we see him doing that. All right, verse 20. Then he made the boards for the tabernacle of acacia wood, standing upright. 10 cubits was the length of each board, and 1.5 cubits the width of each board. There were tenons for each board fitted to one another. Thus he did for all the boards of the tabernacle. He made the boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards for the south side. He made 40 bases of silver under the 20 boards, 2 bases under one board for its 2 tenons, 2 bases under another board for its 2 tenons. Then for the second side of the tabernacle on the north side, he made 20 boards and their 40 bases of silver, 2 bases under one board and 2 bases under another board. For the rear of the tabernacle to the west, he made 6 boards. He made 2 boards for the corners of the tabernacle at the rear, and they were separated beneath, but were together at the completion at the top at the first ring. Thus he did with both of them for the 2 corners. There were 8 boards with their bases of silver, 16 bases, 2 bases under each board, every board. Then he made bars of acacia wood, 5 for the boards of one side of the tabernacle and 5 boards for the boards of the other side of the tabernacle, 5 bars for the boards of the tabernacle for the rear side to the west. He made the middle bar to pass through in the center of the boards from end to end. He also overlaid the boards with gold, made their rings of gold as holders for the bars, and overlaid the bars with gold. Mouthful. We're almost done with this chapter already. Anything there jump out to you? If you're taking notes, this is... What's that?
Knowing a little bit about building, those are huge boards.
They are huge boards. This is a massive undertaking.
Yeah,
remember, how big did we say a cubit was again? 18 inches, right? I mean, they would measure it, yeah.
Be like 24 inches.
Roughly the length of your forearm.
They didn't haul these out of Egypt like that, did they?
No. No. Yeah, I think I shared with y'all before about what the forest looked like now compared to then, right? That all the conquerors that have come through that land build stuff out of wood. They just deforested that area over and over and over again. That's why the pictures we see of it now, I mean, it was pretty rough then too, don't get me wrong, especially where they're at right here, because they're at the base of Sinai. But it's almost verbatim repetition of Exodus 26. So literally 10 chapters ago, I kept referencing that, 10 chapters ago, Exodus 26, 15 through 29, was where all this was handed down to Moses, that this is how you're going to do it. And now we're reading, and they did it, and they're doing it, right? So they're doing what was told to be done. A couple of minor alterations, nothing that affects the text, though. Anything there? Marty, get out the record books. We're gonna break the records tonight. All right, 35. Moreover, we'll stop there for a second. Who's the he we're talking about here? I just want to hear somebody else say the name besides me and Roy.
The name showed up in verse 8. We don't have it in our translation, Bezalel.
No, yeah, I read it at the end of 8. Y'all don't have it in your translation at the end of 8?
It's there. It's kind of odd that it would be in one and not the other.
Yeah. Anybody else have it there? The name Bezalel at the end of verse 8 in that same chapter?
I got a footnote that says it's he.
It is he.
So I bet some say he instead of his name.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And it's probably to kind of help explain who the he is, because here in just a minute we're going to see that definitely is who the he is in the next chapter. We're going to see for sure that that's who it was. So, yeah. Verse 35, right? Moreover, he made the veil of purple, blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. He made it with cherubim, the work of a skillful designer. He made four pillars of acacia for it and overlaid them with gold, with their hooks of gold, and he cast four bases of silver for them. And he made a screen for the doorway of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, the work of a weaver. And he made its five pillars with their hooks, and he overlaid their tops of their bands with gold, but their five bases were of bronze. So at this point, as we conclude chapter 36, what has been made?
The
physical outside of this structure, right? Not the outer wall, but the outside of the tabernacle itself has been made now. Has it all been put together already? Or is all the, what's that?
Just made all the parts.
Everything's ready to be, yeah.
Material is there.
Yeah, he's, it's ready to put it together and dry it in, if we were using common language, I guess.
A friend of mine asked me a question this morning. How did these artists know what the cherubim looked like? Because Moses probably saw them up on the mountain, but to describe to an artist what they look like probably was a bit of a challenge, unless those artists also divinely revealed what they looked like.
I think it almost has to be to be able to do it with that level of craftsmanship that, yeah, it would have to be. Because, you know, we talked last week about how this was this gifting. Some artists have this gifting, but there's a supernatural element to this for sure.
Adam and Esau one, but that's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. The only way you can explain it really is it may be one of those things where they didn't even know God was utilizing them and they were doing it and didn't even.
Ezekiel tried to explain it, but he still can't picture it, you know. And I imagine Moses could do a verbal thing, but to have actually accurate, you know, it's one thing to build those things on top of the altar and then to weave it in something that's just. It's
mind-boggling. But you bringing that up, maybe there was a question I wanted to ask when I was reading through this. And Diane's question kind of prompted that. Prompted me to go back to it, at least. Moreover, verse 35, moreover, he made the veil of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. He made it with the cherubim, the work of a skillful designer. So are we saying that Bezalel, that guy, that he did all this. It looks like it, right? He made the veil. He made it with cherubim, the work of a skillful designer. So is that the descriptive term of him, that he is a skillful designer?
It says they in our translation.
So it's saying they in yours too?
So we don't get him there again.
Is like everybody saying that? What's that?
They don't like him in my translation.
Yes, not. Well, that brings up this question then. When we get to verse 37, does it have his name there?
Yes, it's there. We don't hate
it.
We just ignore
it. Does it say and? That's what I was saying earlier. Chapter 37 connects the work that's done in 36 to him.
They've got a vague doing it.
Yeah. Which that was kind of my thought anyway, is that, remember we said last week that the skill set that he had, he and the other guy was phenomenal. But also one of the things that God gifted them with was the ability to teach others how to do it too, and to be a foreman and have all these different skill sets. Because my thought as I'm reading this is those two guys were probably the only ones that were gifted to be able to do all these different kinds of trades and tasks.
Yeah. You go back to verse 1, for what it's saying.
Yeah.
He gifted them to do all the work.
Yeah.
And the service of the sanctuary.
Yeah. So they were able to go, if we were thinking about modern day tradesmen, you know, go out on a construction site or something, and they had all the knowledge and all the skill set, probably supernaturally given to them, that they could go up and, okay, here's the group of the folks that are doing the concrete work. I don't mean to be crude, but in ways that we can think about today, you know, here's the guys that do this work, and they could go, they were masters at it, and they could teach them how to do it, and then they could go to the masons, to the carpenters, to every trade as you go. But that's even rough and crude compared to the working of weaving this stuff and weaving cherubim inside of a curtain. That's amazing. Yeah. So chapter 37. We're about to break the record in this reading right here. And Bezalel, I think I've said his name different every time, made the ark of acacia wood. Its length was 2.5 cubits, and its width 1.5 cubits, and its height 1.5 cubits. And he overlaid it with pure gold inside and out and made a gold molding for it all around. He cast four rings of gold for it on its 4 feet, even two rings on one side of it and two rings on the other side of it. He made poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold. He put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark to carry it. He made a mercy seat of pure gold, 2.5 cubits long and 1.5 cubits wide. He made two cherubim of gold. He made them of hammered work at the two ends of the mercy seat. One cherub at the one end and one cherub at the other end. From one piece, he made the mercy seat with the cherubim at its two ends. The cherubim had their wings spread outward, covering the mercy seat with their wings, with their faces toward each other. The faces of the cherubim were toward the mercy seat. We read about all this stuff back in chapter 25, but to read about him doing it adds another layer to it to me. Y'all remember when we were talking about this stuff they were supposed to build, and we're like, how in the world? You know, we kept saying, we're going to see. Well, now we're seeing it. Not literally, but I mean, in the text, we're seeing it. Anything in that text really jump out to y'all now that it's actually happening? Now that it's actually happening, does anything jump out to you now? Or maybe you thought about it since we were back there, you know, 10 chapters ago? Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Okay. Okay. Y'all probably didn't hear what Ms. Edith said. She said that the guy who's the supervisor, who's running it, he's the one that's getting the credit or taking the credit for it. Of course, things go bad. He's supposed to take, you know, that blame for it too, but that's a good point Missy is bringing up there, is that it's his responsibility to get it done, right? So, okay, I like that. Yeah. I think there may be something, I like that a lot. I think there may be something to this working of the cherubim, though, that I think God would get, because we were asking about how did they know. Maybe he specifically had that. The thing that jumps out at me, anything else anybody jumps out at anybody right there? I think we talked about this, but how do you do this? Granted, I think we've all acknowledged there's a supernatural aspect to this for sure, and a giftedness. But from one piece, he made the mercy seat, one big piece of gold. We get that. But verse 7, and we talked about this, I think. I don't know that we landed at a strong conclusion, but he made them of hammered work. How do you design these? We've seen pictures of what a mercy seat would look like. Most of us, I think, on top of the Ark of the Covenant. How do you do that? How does that hammered work?
Maybe they hammered the gold to soften it up so they could craft it with something else. It says beating gold behind, but it just, maybe they did a special process to the gold so they could shape it more accurately.
I'm sure it was heated in some way to make it softer, but I'm still telling you, I mean, I've swung a hammer many, many, many times in my life. Of course, I don't claim to have that kind of skill set anyway. But these people we talked last week about, these sculptors that take a piece of marble, their primary tools is a hammer and a chisel.
Yeah.
As opposed to being a molten piece that they put in a mold.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, tell me, what comes to y'all's mind? Because I have problem trying to grasp that except for a hammer and chisel.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, hammer and a chisel.
Probably different size chisels and...
Well, after all, Aaron just threw the gold in the fire and the calf jumped out, so maybe there's something
Let's not give Aaron some, you know... Aaron's about to turn a corner here, so let's not pull him back into that. Any other thoughts? Have you ever thought about it before or realized that it's talking about being hammered work? If somebody can give me a better explanation than a hammer and a chisel, I'm not saying I'll accept it, but... Well, they would have different size chisels and different ends and different... You still have that today, you know, with different size chisels. And people still work wood and stone and rock with hammers and chisels today. And again, we talked about some of these sculptures that are on display around the world that look like flesh, and some of them look like you see the tendons and everything in the arms and stuff, so... It's just, maybe it's just so far beyond anything I could ever do that it's so hard for me to grasp. I don't know. But some of y'all, you're like, yeah, it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me because God says it, but I think maybe.
Well, it's actually trying to cut it and shape it. I mean, it's shaped, but they use some copper works. It's scabbards, like copper, like as a design. Maybe that's a texture or something like that to, for appearance.
Yeah. Well, we know it's not molded. It's done in this way instead. So, anyway, any other thoughts on that before we move on?
But God.
But God,
on the theological significance of the incredible precision. Why?
Incredible precision of what he wanted crafted.
This whole thing. God told them down to the finest details, and they're doing it that way. And
it's mirroring something that's in heaven perfectly. And
yeah.
So you wanted to get as close to perfection on earth as you could.
Well, we're talking about that. What back when we were in that text talking about everything. Remember when he's telling him, he's like you've seen and that kind of thing. So we were seeing that Moses was given a glimpse, a view, an audience, a window, whatever you want to say, to see something that's trying to be replicated here on the earth.
I mean, we will see it here shortly. But this continues right on through the details of the surfaces and
so
precise.
You know, it's not much conversation about Moses, though. Can you imagine him seeing this all come together? What his thoughts are? I mean, God showed him the mountain, and he's actually seen it.
Yeah, yeah, he's kind of off to the side here for a while, then he comes back.
Yeah.
We may, because they got to present it to him.
Yeah.
And he's got to prove it.
Yeah. But still, just
seeing
the reality of what God showed
him. Another miracle is that he remembered all of this. Because, like, John in Revelation was given something to write on, but Moses wasn't that we know of.
That we know of, yeah. I've seen some commentators kind of talk about that was there some way that he wrote any of this down?
But that's just a lot of detail, plus all the laws that he.
Yeah.
There's got to be something supernatural going on there.
Yep. Any other thoughts? We got the ark built. Okay, verse 10. Then he made the table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long and 1 cubit wide and 1.5 cubits high. He overlaid it with pure gold and made a gold molding for it around. He made a rim for it of a handbreadth all around and made a gold molding for its rim all around. He cast 4 gold rings for it and put the rings on the 4 corners that were on its 4 feet. Close to the rim were the rings, the holders for the poles to carry the table. He made the poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold to carry the table. He made the utensils which were on the table, its dishes and its pans and its offering bowls and its jars with which to pour out drink offerings of pure gold. Again, so we're, this table, what is this table for? Anybody remember? What will be on this table?
Showbread.
The showbread, yeah. And this will be located where in the tabernacle? Right outside that inner veil, right? Any other thoughts there? All of this is found in Exodus 25, the initial time that God was telling Moses about it. Now, does it say anything about the bread of the presence here, the showbread or anything here? Yeah, it will when we get to Exodus 40, though. Any other thoughts? Verse 17. Then he made the lampstand of pure gold. He made the lampstand of hammered work. Its base and its shaft, its cups, its bulbs, and its flowers were of the same piece. There were 6 branches going out of its sides, 3 branches of the lampstand from the one side of it, and 3 branches of the lampstand from the other side of it, 3 cups. Shaped like almond blossoms, a bulb and a flower in one branch, and 3 cups shaped like almond blossoms, a bulb and a flower in the other branch. So for the 6 branches coming out of the lampstand, in the lampstand there were 4 cups shaped like almond blossoms, its bulbs and its flowers. And a bulb was under the first pair of branches coming out of it, and a bulb under the second pair of branches coming out of it, and a bulb under the third pair of branches coming out of it for the 6 branches coming out of the lampstand. Their bulbs and their branches were of one piece with it. The whole of it was a single hammered work of pure gold. He made it 7 lamps with its tongs and its trays of pure gold. He made it and all its utensils from 1 talent of pure gold. What is this he's making? Hey, there you go. Marty's got a picture of it that I printed out. Or an artist rendering of it, I should say. That's the menorah. 3 months ago is whenever. What else there? One piece. We'll get that in just a second because it comes up again here in just a minute. Because here in a minute it talks about how much material it actually took to do all this. I don't know if we'll get that far tonight or not, but. What's that? Yeah, one talent for this. Solid piece. Hammered work again. Bulbs and flowers and bowls that go on the lamp stands. Okay. Anything else there? Verse 25. Then he made the altar of incense of acacia wood, a cubit long and a cubit wide, square, 2 cubits high. Its horns were of one piece with it. He overlaid it with pure gold, its tops and its sides all around, and its horns, and he made a gold molding for it all around. He had 2 gold rings for it under its molding on its two sides, on opposite sides, as holders for poles with which to carry it. He made the poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold. He made the holy anointing oil and the pure fragrant incense of spices, the work of a perfumer. So the altar of incense, that goes back to Exodus 30. This final sentence is kind of a summary of everything Exodus 30 tells us. And he made the holy anointing oil and the pure fragrant incense of spices, the work of perfumer. So all of those details we read about then were made and mixed and put together for right here. Any thoughts? That's 2 chapters. Exodus 38. Then he made the altar of burnt offering of acacia wood. 5 cubits long, 5 cubits wide, square, 3 cubits high. He made its horns on its 4 corners, its horns being of one piece with it, and he overlaid it with bronze. He made all the utensils of the altar, the pots and the shovels and the bowls, the flesh hooks and the fire pans. He made all its utensils of bronze. He made for it the altar of grating of a network of bronze beneath under its ledge, reaching halfway down. He cast 4 rings on the 4 ends of the bronze grating as holders for the poles. He made the poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with bronze. He inserted the poles into the rings on the sides of the altar with which to carry it. He made it hollow with planks. What is this? Where does this go? Anybody remember? Outside the tabernacle meeting out front. What would go on here? That's the sacrifices, yeah. You have the pots and the bowls and the shovels and all this kind of stuff going on to catch the drippings and all that. 38:8. Moreover, he made the laver of bronze with its base of bronze from the mirrors of the serving women who served at the doorway at the tent of meeting. Now, hold on. There's something a little different here than what we've said so far and that we looked at, you know, a couple months ago. So this is kind of a summary of Exodus 30, 17 through 21. Most of those details, they're found back there, but this laver was constructed from material given by the serving women who served at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Now, the tent of meeting hadn't been built yet, right? I mean, well, this is the tabernacle anyway. What is the tent of meeting then? Came from these ladies who stand at the doorway of it, but they're actually building the tabernacle right now. What's this talking about? That's what the speculation and most smart thinkers will go to, saying it's probably that tent. Remember, Moses had that tent outside far away that he would go out and commune with God away from everybody. That's what most people will lean to. There's only one other place, one other reference to these people in Scripture, which I also found interesting. 1 Samuel 2:22. Now Eli was very old. This is when Eli's hearing about what his sons are doing. And he heard all that his sons were doing to all Israel and how they lay with the women who served at the doorway at the tent of meeting. there's no evidence that they had any ceremonial or ritual function at the tabernacle. We know there wouldn't be, you know, ritualistic, the prostitution you see at these pagan temples and everything. That's the only other reference to them is right there. It does seem strange. Tabernacle hasn't been built yet. So, as Diane referenced, most commentators that think very long on this would go back to Exodus 33 and say this is that place that Moses would go out to commune with God. That was outside the camp. Remember that place we studied in Exodus 33?
My note in verse 7 says that a lot of the translations leave out that part of the verse, too.
Yeah.
So, it's a little iffy on that side.
The laver was for water and ceremonial cleansing. Wasn't that what?
Mm-hmm. So
there's a reference. I don't even know where it is. Somewhere in the New Testament, in the Paul's writings, when he's writing about caring for widows, yet one of the things had they washed the feet of the elders?
Yeah.
I wonder if these women actually had a role in the cleansing somehow.
Perhaps it was a self-appointed thing that they did, you know, like they wanted to come do it, like they weren't directed to go do it, but they wanted something they wanted to, which you weren't saying it was one way or the other anyway.
But
it definitely doesn't seem like
associated with the labor.
Sure,
I mean, some cleansing role.
I don't have any way to dispute it or confirm it, so possibly, sure. What about the... They made the laver of bronze with its base of bronze from the mirrors of the serving women. We read a lot about mirrors. Where do these mirrors come from? They're out in the desert. I mean,
they're not glass mirrors. They're bronze.
They're not. So how do you have a bronze mirror?
Real shiny.
So I found a commentary about that because it just kind of jumps out. I mean, this whole verse just kind of jumps out as being a little bit different. This commentary said, these women felt led to donate the bronze mirrors in the making of the laver. These mirrors undoubtedly came from Egypt. Egypt was well known in antiquity for making cosmetic objects, in particular mirrors. We know they were quite vain anyway. Egyptian mirrors consisted of either cast or hammered metal disc, almost always in an elliptical shape, made mostly of either copper or bronze. They were polished to a radiant sheen, then they were inserted into a handle made of wood, stone, ivory, or metal. The handles were carved with all different kinds of representations, such as gods during the New Kingdom period. So, yeah, this metal would just be polished and polished and polished to the point that it would give a reflection. It wouldn't be like the mirrors we have today, but that's where it came from. All right. Any thoughts there? Let's pick up in verse 9. Then he made the court. For the south side of the hangings of the court were a fine twisted linen, 100 cubits. There are 20 pillars and their 20 bases made of bronze. The hooks of the pillars and their bands were of silver. For the north side there were 100 cubits. Their 20 pillars and their 20 bases were of bronze. The hooks of the pillars and their bands were of silver. For the west side there were hangings of 50 cubits with 10 pillars and their 10 bases. The hooks of the pillars and their bands were of silver. For the east side, toward the sunrise, 50 cubits. The hangings for the one side of the gate were 15 cubits with their three pillars and their three bases, and so for the other side. On both sides of the gate of the court were hangings of 15 cubits with their three pillars and their three bases. All the hangings of the court were all around, court all around were of fine twisted linen. The bases for the pillars were of bronze. The hooks of the pillars and their bands were of silver, and the overlaying of their tops were of silver, and all the pillars of the court were furnished with silver bands. The screen of the gate of the court was the work of the weaver, of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, and the length was about 20 cubits, and the height was 5 cubits, corresponding to the hangings of the court. Their four pillars and their four bases were of bronze, their hooks were of silver, the overlayings of their tops and their bands were of silver. All the pegs of the tabernacle and of the court all around were of bronze. What is this describing? Outer court. The broader court, it says there. We're talking hundreds of things versus, so this is the outer. And you get the reference, you get the size dimensions. We looked at this. I should have went and pulled my notes from back then, but we looked at the size of it. We said it would be, I don't even remember how big we said it would be. Wasn't it like a little less than half a football field, I believe is right. Any other thoughts there?
Would this be the area where the Jewish people would go into?
There were
Jewish young men, because I think it right there. That's what's the thing this week it's talking about. Tabernacle was talking about. I was thinking it said that the court of the tabernacle would be where the young Jewish men would gather.
Yeah, but I think they had a name for that after the temple itself was built, too.
Yeah,
there's some of
the
temple.
The altar of sacrifice was inside of this space.
Yes.
The animals and everything that everybody was bringing, they would kill them in this
area. Yeah, in this area, yeah. I mean, they're getting them up to where they were, yeah. Okay, now here's to the question that we were talking about just a minute ago, starting in verse 21. These are the things numbered for the tabernacle of the testimony, as they were numbered according to the command of Moses for the service of the Levites by the hand of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the priest. Now Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, made all that Yahweh had commanded Moses. With him was Aholiab, the son of Ashemot, of the tribe of Dan, a craftsman and a skillful designer and a weaver in blue and in purple and in scarlet material and fine linen. All the gold that was used for the work and all the works of the sanctuary, even the gold of the wave offering, was 29 talents and 730 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. The silver of the congregation who were numbered was 100 talents and 1775 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. A bika a head, that is half a shekel, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, for each one who passed over to those who were numbered from 20 years old and upward, for 603,550 men. 100 talents of silver were for casting the bases of the sanctuary and the bases of the veil, 100 bases for 100 talents, a talent for a base. Of the 1,775 shekels, he made hooks for the pillars and overlaid their tops and made bands for them. The bronze of the wave offering was 70 talents and 2,400 shekels. With it he made the bases to the doorway of the tent of meeting and the bronze altar and its bronze grating and all the utensils of the altar, the bases of the court all around, and the bases of the gate of the court, and all the pegs of the tabernacle, and all the pegs of the court all around. Okay, so this one does expand a little bit here. We went through a lot of that was kind of rapid fire. This slows down just a little bit here. These first three verses, it lists the people, lists the individuals involved. We knew about the two chief builders there, supervisors, what have you. Ithamar. Have we heard of him yet, Ithamar? No. Who is he? Well, it tells us. Who is he the son of? Yes, he's the son of Aaron. So, he's mentioned in the genealogy back in Exodus 6, 23, but it's kind of a passing reference, and we keep on moving. So, he's been referenced before, mentioned. Referenced again in 28:1. He is named to be set apart. Exodus 28:1. Now as for you, bring near to yourself Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the sons of Israel to minister as priests to me, Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, Aaron's sons. Ithamar kind of seems to be the lost one and all that, right? The other names jump out at us and we remember more, but he's one of them too. Mm-hmm. Now in Numbers chapter 4, we read that the duty of the Gershonites is to care for the covering of the tabernacle. We talked about this a long time ago, too. How did they transport it? Who took care of it? Who was responsible for it, right? Who carries this? Who carries that? Well, the Gershonites, Numbers 4 tells us, they were the ones that were supposed to care for the covering of the tabernacle during the wilderness wanderings. And they were under the direction of this guy, Ithamar. Numbers 4, 21 through 28 tells us that. Two chief builders are mentioned again. This is the first time, or the only time, I'm sorry, in the book of Exodus that the sanctuary is called the Tabernacle of Testimony. Does anyone else say that? Verse 21, the Tabernacle of the Testimony. Why that name? It's a rare occurrence. It's that language is only used only elsewhere in Numbers. Numbers 1 in verse 50 and 53, and in Numbers 10. The testimony referencing what? The covenant relationship between God and Israel. So that's, once this is done, God says he would dwell with them, the Emmanuel principle, right? The testimony of that presence there with them.
If we read anything about the wave offering being a thing,
there was an off reference to it some time ago, but it didn't go into great detail, just kind of like a here it is and move on.
I mean, I thought it, I've always thought about it as a gesture with a
chief of wheat. I think it's both.
It's,
I think it's both.
Shekels, and
yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I think it's one of those kind of lost to. Then we get into what Diane asked about a minute ago, the talents. So verse 24 through 31 kind of deal with these weights and measures and numbers. It says the amount of gold donated was 29 talents and 730 shekels. So a talent is 3,000 shekels. So the entire amount of gold donated was 87,730 shekels. We don't know precisely the weight of a shekel. And actually, the weight of a shekel has changed over time, depending on kind of like the way the value of money today, really, you know, we just see $1 is $1, but on the major market, it doesn't always have the same value. It's just a piece of paper, really, is all it is. It's representative of something. It stands for something else. That's why it's called a note. It's representative of what backs it up, and the value of that determines what the value of the dollar is. That really hasn't changed in history. The shekel was kind of the same way. Usually it's based on weight, though, the weight of the shekel. So there are inscriptions discovered in Palestine that says that a shekel usually weighed anything between 8 to 12 grams. 8 to 12 grams.
Mine says 75 pounds.
75 pounds for a talent, not a shekel, a talent, right? A shekel wasn't 75
talents
pounds.
Or about 75
talents,
and
yes. So, yeah, 75 pounds is kind of the general thought of what a talent would have weighed in that time period. That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of gold. Yep. What did we say a talent, what was made out of a single talent?
All the stuff that's in, all the utensils and stuff for 1 pound, probably. The lampstand.
The menorah. Remember, we talked about how big the menorah was. We think of the lampstand being this little thing that you can sit on a... No, it was big.
What is a bar of gold?
I don't know. Somebody can Google that for us, though, I bet. If you know, he knows off the top of their head what a bar of gold weighs.
I thought Mike might know.
He hasn't went back to his... Shit in a
while. Yeah.
He dug it up.
He probably does know. He's just not telling us. Somebody can look it up for us, though.
Google it.
Yep, somebody can Google it for us. To be exact on the amount of gold used would be, we couldn't be exact about it, like the weight of it, but we know a talent is usually considered around 75 pounds. And it talks about the donation of the silver during the offering. A beka or a beka was presented by each man. This was half a shekel. We read about that. So the term for each man is literally a head, and it refers to the same, like a head count or a poll tax almost. What else comes up in that text right there, though? Verse 26, this poll tax or this head tax, each one who passed over to those who were numbered from 20 years old and upward for how many men? 603,550. This is just for the men 20 years of age and older. Most of those men would have probably been married at that age in that culture. Then you double the number. And you figure in children, You could potentially triple that number or more, potentially. So this is how we get into that, talking about over a million people. You get it pretty quick right there. Right? Just by doubling it, you're over a million before you ever start thinking about children. This is just for those 20 and older. You're going to get taxed, brother. It's taxing them right here. You got to pay that. We know you'd have been over collecting the money anyway. You'd be piling up that gold.
The gold was accumulated with jewelry and stuff like that. It wasn't in chunks. So they had to know the weight of it. They had to put it together or something.
There'd been some kind of scale, some weight and measure system. So we saw some of that stuff when we were over there. They carved off these pieces of metal and put it in the scale to kind of rudimentary at best, but they had a standard that they used. I guess about the only way we can say there was a standard in which they used what the value of it was.
They had to haul a lot of stuff out of Egypt. That's heavy.
They did haul a lot of stuff out of Egypt for sure, mm-hmm. that God gave to them through the people to haul out. So again, we talked about this when they left there, right? That all this stuff, they're leaving with all this stuff, and in their minds, I know probably most of our minds, God gave you this quote-unquote bounty to come out of Egypt with. What are you thinking that's going to be for? I'm thinking it's God's blessed me with all this stuff, so I can get out there on the open market. We can trade this stuff and get some value out of it. But he gave them overabundantly because, remember, they had to shut them off. He's like, that's enough. We've got all we need. So it's not like they gave every single thing they had. But there's a willingness there at some point to give to a certain degree. We don't know they would give all everything they have, but they were still giving when he told them that's enough. Any other thoughts there?
This is after the whole golden calf thing, and they were pretty serious about pleasing God by that time.
Yeah, that shock and awe worked pretty good. That's not too far behind them. Any other thoughts? I thought we might get further than that, but we're not going to tonight. We're up against it. Two more chapters and we're done with Exodus, though. John, are you clapping for me? Any other thoughts here? What jumps out at you? I mean, we kind of started talking about it before we ever jumped in, of the detail at which it was carried out to this point. We didn't get to the priestly garments because there's some intricate details there, too, that they're in the next chapter. Anybody? At first glance, it is, okay, we're just going through the motions of reading through this, and I hope y'all didn't get that impression from me that I was just getting through the motions, but we've already studied this. This is just taking this and putting it together. We're not even putting it together yet, just making it. They didn't put it together yet. Not all of it.
Mm-hmm. Took a lot of hands, too.